Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In local news headlines, Hy-Vee recalls boxed meal due to undeclared allergen. A regional grocery chain is recalling a boxed meal sold at its stores. Hy-Vee is voluntarily recalling its Hy-Vee chili macaroni hamburger skillet meal because of the presence of an undeclared allergen that is not listed on product packaging, according to a press release. The release states that Hy-Vee was alerted to the undeclared allergen on Friday. There have been no reports of adverse reactions. The recalled product has a UPC of 00754500855520 and has a lot number of Feb 8, 24 Y18, and was distributed to Hy-Vee and Dollar Fresh market stores in 8 states, including Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin. Customers who purchase the item and have a dairy sensitivity should throw it away or return it to the store for a refund. Call Hy-Vee at 800-772-4098 for more information. Frozen fruit sold at Aldi, Trader Joe's recalled. Frozen organic fruit sold at Aldi in Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin, and at Trader Joe's nationwide is being recalled due to a possible exposure to hepatitis A virus. Scenic Fruit Company of Gresham, Oregon is recalling Simply Nature organic strawberries with a best buy date of June 14, 2024 on Trader Joe's tropical fruit blended pineapple, bananas, strawberries, and mango with best buy dates of April 25, 24, May 12, 23, and 30 of 24, and June 7, 20 of 2024, according to a press release issued by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The release states that hepatitis A has not been detected in the product, but the items are being recalled out of caution for consumers. Consumers who have purchased the items are urged to destroy them or return them to a store for a refund. Email the company at customer.service@scenicfruit.com for more information. City of Dubuque accepting applications for arts and culture grants. The City of Dubuque is accepting applications for its annual arts and cultures special project grants. Since 2005, the program annually provides support to arts and cultural experiences in Dubuque, according to an online announcement. Grants are allocated in amounts ranging from $1,000 to $8,000 to nonprofit organizations. Dubuque Great-based groups operating in service to the broader community but not incorporated as a nonprofit, according to the City of Dubuque website. An informational webinar about the grants will be held at 2 p.m. April 7th. Register online at register.gotowebinar.com/register 4710350770850. Oh, there's many other numbers. You simply need to register online. Applications are due May 12th and are available online. Visit cityofdubuque.org 2358special-project-grant for more information. City pursuing a solution for reducing contaminants in drinking water. Story by John Cruz at thmedia.com. The City of Dubuque has a plan to mitigate the levels of potentially harmful, quote, forever chemicals discovered in its drinking water last year. Water Department Manager Christopher Lester said the city intends to spend about $4.2 million over the next 3 fiscal years to drill a new deep well, which will be capable of pumping an additional $3.5 million of water per day and further dilute the levels of PFAS originating from the city's shallow wells. The city's fiscal year 2024 budget allocates $1.15 million towards planning and design. The city is exploring implementation of a granular activated carbon filter rehabilitation treatment solution that would also reduce the level of PFAS in the city's water. That project would cost about $9.6 million. The details of both projects will be provided in an upcoming PFAS mediation plan being developed by the city and consultant Strand Associates Incorporated. Lester said the finalized plan will provide a long-term strategy for addressing PFAS and the water supply. It is expected to be finalized by mid to late April at the earliest, Lester said. Dubuque Mayor Brad Kavanaugh said the projects would be costly, and he emphasized that the city is exploring all avenues for funding them, including government grants and potential payouts through litigation against the private companies whose operations produce PFAS contamination. A report by Bloomberg Law in May 2022 found that more than 6,400 PFAS-related lawsuits have been filed since 2005. Quote, "There's national litigation that is around this," Kavanaugh said. "We are definitely exploring options for what that might look like." Perfluoroalkyl and polyfluoroalkyl substances, commonly known as PFAs, are a group of thousands of man-made chemicals that have been used in industry and consumer products since the 1940s because of their useful properties, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's. PFAS sometimes can be found in common products such as food packaging, including fast food wrappers and wrappers, microwave popcorn bags, pizza boxes, and candy wrappers. The EPA says exposures to high levels of certain PFAs might lead to adverse health outcomes, but research is ongoing regarding the potential health impacts of different levels of exposure. Last year, testing conducted by the city showed detectable levels of PFAs in all five of the city's shallow wells, but they were not detected in the city's four deep wells. In response, the city began blending water from its deep wells with shallow well water to dilute the levels of PFAS in the drinking water. The strategy has worked, Lester said. The most recent water sampling conducted by the city on February 14th showed levels of PFOA and PFOS, two types of PFAS, were below the federal minimum reporting threshold of 4 parts per trillion. Lester said one sample does not promise long-term results, and the city intends to invest in constructing a new well in order to ensure that the levels of PFAS remain low throughout the year. Quote, "We're not going to be satisfied until we know that we can consistently get those levels below the minimum reporting threshold," Lester said. "We are looking to do the right thing. We are not going to try to take any shortcuts." The city's plans for the new well come as the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is in the midst of introducing regulations for PFAS and local drinking water supplies. On March 14th, EPA released its proposed primary drinking water regulation that would require municipalities to reduce their levels of PFOA and PFOS to levels at or below 4 parts per trillion, while 4 additional PFAS chemicals would be regulated as a mixture using the EPA's hazard index. The proposed regulation is expected to be finalized by the end of the year. Corey McCoyd, water supply operations supervisor and PFAS coordinator for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, said the proposed regulation could be changed before it is finalized, but the proposal does provide a rough idea of what levels of PFAS cities should be striving to reach. Quote, "They can start planning at this point and looking at different options," McCoyd said. Lester said the most recent tests of the city's water supply indicate that its efforts to blend its deep and shallow well water is reducing the level of PFAS below the proposed regulatory amounts for PFOA and PFOS. He said that the city will move forward with planning its project to drill a new deep well and explore a water treatment solution. Dubuque is not the only local community dealing with PFAS in its water supply. Testing by the DNR in August of Bellevue's drinking water revealed levels of PFOA and PFOS above the federal minimum reporting threshold. Officials with Bellevue Municipal Utilities did not return calls for comment on this story. McCoyd said 20 drinking water operations in Iowa are required to undergo quarterly monitoring for PFAS. He added that the Iowa DNR and EPA officials plan to conduct water sampling tests for PFAS over the next several years. Local pharmacies feeling a strong shortage of ADHD medication. Story by Kaylee Reese at thmedia.com. A national shortage of medication to treat attention deficit / hyperactivity disorder has been ongoing for months, and local officials still are having issues obtaining the needed supply. In October, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced a shortage of amphetamine mixed salts, commonly referred to by the brand name Adderall, due to, quote, manufacturing delays. Local pharmacy and hospital officials have been feeling the strain of the shortage, which has been reported across the country. Things were getting tight probably about 6 months ago, said Heather Rickardson, Crescent Community Health Center Director of Clinical Pharmacy Services. Quote, at the pharmacy, we were like, we know the customers we're serving, let's try to work ahead. But then the supplies started dwindling and we took on unexpected demand. One pharmacy would be out one day, another pharmacy the next day. The ability to predict the utilization of the medication got really hard and eventually exhausted our supplies. Charlie Hartig, CEO of Hartig Drug, said pharmacies are currently dealing with both regulatory and demand challenges when it comes to ADHD medication shortages. On the regulatory side, he said, the Drug Enforcement Administration sets quotas on how much of a drug can be imported and produced in the country each year, and those quotas historically have not changed due to market demand. In addition, he said, recent opioid settlements with major drug wholesalers have made those wholesalers more judicious when supplying various kinds of medications, not just opioids. Quote, pharmacies are battling not only supply quotas, but also the wholesalers' imposed compliance requirements, Hartig said. He added that the medication is also in higher demand as more people receive a diagnosis. With a quota set, there is not really a lot of extra doses to go around, he said. I don't think the quotas were set with more people with ADHD in mind, so that's probably driving a lot of shortages as well. Rickardson said a lot of Crescent's patients use Medicaid, which previously covered two generic types of ADHD medication and Vyvanse. Now Medicaid no longer serves Vyvanse, and generic options are in short supply. She added that a lack of generic options is also forcing patients to consider branded medications as options, which are more expensive. Where we're at right now in the community pretty much is one pharmacy once a week will get a bottle of something, and as soon as they get it in, it's already gone. Tons of patients are waiting for it. Currently, we are fielding at least 10 calls a day asking, do you have this drug? Right now, our only answer is no. Hartig said the shortages have improved from what they were 3 to 6 months ago, and Hartig pharmacies have been getting better at navigating the issue. What we're doing at Hartig Drug is focusing on obtaining any different varieties of strengths we can and working with patients and providers to change directions and requiring new prescriptions to accommodate patient needs. Some people really need these medications to function at work or home, and we're doing our very best to maintain and keep access. Greg Brocious, Director of Pharmacy at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital, said the shortages are not seen very often in the hospital setting, but are being experienced by Finley's retail pharmacies. I don't think it's affected our pharmacies as much, but has it affected them, he said. There are times when they have had to turn patients away because there is no medication. We do try to keep patients already on the medication continuing on and have a supply for them, but for new patients starting the medication, it can be difficult to obtain. Brocious said the previously reported national shortage on pediatric medications has subsided, but hospitals still face medication shortages consistently. It's kind of come and go, and we deal with them as best as possible with alternatives in different sizes, he said. It seems like something we've never dealt with 20 years ago is now a daily occurrence. We're always dealing with some sort of shortage, but in general, Adderall affects the community more than most of what we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis in the hospital. Rickardson said she is also concerned about a shortage of albuterol, which is used in inhalers to treat asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease after the shutdown of the manufacturer Acorn Pharmaceuticals. She said she currently has 9 boxes of nebulizer solution available for those patients, with more backordered until May. In addition, those boxes now cost $90 when they were previously $5 to $10. Quote, that medication in particular is a life necessity with those with asthma and COPD, she said. There's not going to be any other options than the hospital. Charges dismissed against Dubuque man accused of sexually abusing teen. Charges against a Dubuque man accused of sexually abusing a teen have been dismissed. Brandon J. Brenke, 21, was previously charged in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County with third-degree sexual abuse and assault with intent to commit sexual abuse. Brenke was set to start his trial on charges today. However, Assistant Dubuque County Attorney Joshua Sims filed a motion on Friday to dismiss the charges. Quote, insufficient evidence exists to prove this offense beyond a reasonable doubt, the motion states. Court documents state that Brenke was accused of sexually abusing Yinu in 2021 in Dubuque. Popular Iowa cover band to headline show for Q Casino Summer Concert Series. A popular Iowa cover band will headline a show as part of a Dubuque Summer Concert Series. Pork Tornadoes will perform at Q Casino's Backwater Stage on June 3rd, along with opening act Vice Box. Gates will open at 7 p.m. and the concert will begin at 8 p.m. Tickets for the show will go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday, March 31, and will be $20 per ticket. Tickets can be purchased at backwaterstage.com or at guest services at Q Casino. Pork Tornadoes are the fourth act announced as part of this year's Q Casino Summer Concert Series. Chart-topping rapper Flo Rida will perform at the Backwater Stage on May 27th. Last week was announced that the hit rock band Three Doors Down will perform on June 23rd. Grammy Award-winning country artist Darius Rucker will headline a show on July 13th. Out with a bang, Dubuque Symphony Orchestra concludes series with new anthem, Revered Classics. Story by Megan Gloss at thmedia.com. This concert season marked a significant milestone for the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra. Since February 2020, in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, it had reduced its number of concerts, reduced the number of patrons who could attend those concerts, and reduced the number of musicians it could accommodate on stage for social distancing. And although it still strived to deliver an engaging musical experience for audiences, nothing has compared to being able to ease restrictions that hindered public performances for the past 3 years, according to music director and conductor William Intrilgator. To tell you the truth, I was nervous at times, he said. We always had protocols in place, but we never knew if there was going to be another outbreak. We did have musicians who needed to sit out from time to time, though that didn't happen as often as you think. We were, for the most part, able to get back to normal this season, back to programming that enabled our musicians to work, and back to programming, performing the larger orchestral works that we're known for performing. The symphony will conclude its fifth and final classic series segment of the 2023-2024 season at 7 p.m. Saturday, April 1 and 2 p.m. Sunday, April 2nd at Five Flags Theater. Dubbed Human Nature as part of its Winged and Wild season theme, the concerts will explore a piece by African-American composer Valerie Coleman, as well as two Russian stalwarts, Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2 and Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 4. Written in 2020 as a commission for the Philadelphia Orchestra, Coleman's piece, 7 O'Clock Shout, represents a piece of the puzzle artists were busy creating during the uncertainty of the pandemic. It was inspired by the frontline workers who the composer would witness switching shifts at 7 o'clock, Intrilgator said. During that time, people would cheer, clap, and clank pots and pans together outside their windows in tribute to those workers. The piece opens with a distant fanfare shared between two trumpets in a representation of isolation and the urgency to reach out towards one another. It then builds as an anthem dedicated to nurses, doctors, and other caregivers. The characterization of the piece reminds me a lot of Aaron Copland, Intrilgator said. It carries the same kind of distinctive American sound. It's an amazing piece. Continuing the program are two musical selections steeped in Russian artistic and cultural expressions, something symphony officials weighed heavily when moving forward with the program. Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2, set to be performed by Russian pianist Ilya Yakushev alongside the symphony, is widely regarded as one of the greatest piano concerto ever to be penned. Likewise, Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 4 also is among the symphonic greats, composed fittingly as a reconciliation. We plan our concert season so far in advance and had planned to include Ilya and these pieces in our program long before Putin invaded Ukraine, Intrilgator said. We did discuss it as a lot as staff, and we were in agreement Ilya wasn't the problem. In fact, he lived in the U.S. for 25 years, longer than he lived in Russia. When we let him know we intended to keep him as part of the program, he was in tears because so much of his U.S. work has dried up in the wake of the war. We also believe that music is one of those art forms that is universal. It speaks to the human experiences. These two pieces that speak to Russia at varying times of its history and in the lives of the composers. Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2 was a piece achieved through hypnosis. Believing he was suffering from writer's block, Rachmaninoff engaged in daily sessions with Dr. Nikolai Dahl, a Russian neurologist for whom the piece is dedicated. He told Rachmaninoff that one of the first things he would compose after coming out of his writer's block was a great piano concerto, Drilligator said. Of course, that came to be, and he gave us one of the best ever written. An accomplished soloist who studied music in St. Petersburg, Russia before attending the Mannes College of Music in New York City, the award-winning Yakushev has performed across the globe at prestigious venues, including Carnegie Hall and with a variety of symphonic ensembles. He last performed with the Dubuque Symphony Orchestra in 2016 as a soloist for Prokofiev's Piano Concert No. 3. Additionally, he has appeared with the Cheyenne, Wyoming Symphony Orchestra, of which Trilligator also is at the helm. He's one of my favorite piano soloists to collaborate with, and although we've done several pieces with one another, Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2 will be the first, Trilligator said. Tchaikovsky's Fourth Movement, Symphony No. 4, will cap the concerts off with a bang, literally. The Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff pieces on this program both are among the audition segments used for cymbal players, Trilligator said. For the Rachmaninoff, it's about playing softly and musically, but for Tchaikovsky, it's about endurance. There are 192 cymbal crashes in this piece, all differing in the way they're played, and in sound and in volume. While this marks the grand finale of the symphony's classic series, the ensemble has a pair of concerts left among its offerings this season. The Dubuque Symphony Orchestra will be performing its annual Ultimate Country Hits concerts on May 19th, 20th at the Mississippi Moon Bar, Trilligator said. We'll also be performing our annual Summer Melodies concert on June 25th at the Dubuque Arboretum and Botanical Gardens. If you go, Classic No. 5, Human Nature, performers Dubuque Symphony Orchestra and pianist Ilya Yakushev. Time date 7:30 p.m. Saturday, April 1, 2 p.m. Sunday, April 2, Site 5 Flags Theater, 405 Main Street. Cost $20 to $89. Tickets are available from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday at Five Flags Center box office and at Ticketmaster.com plus fees. Online, check DubukeSymphony.org. The program, 7 o'clock shout by Valerie Coleman, Piano Concerto No. 2 by Sergei Rachmaninoff, Symphony No. 4 by Pyotr Tchaikovsky, pre-concert events, soundbites luncheon, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday, March 31, Dubuque Golf and Country Club, 1800 Randall Place, a buffet followed by commentary by William and Trilligator and guest artists. The cost is $20. Reservations can be made by calling 563-557-1677. Musical Musings, 1 p.m. Sunday, April 2nd, a pre-concert lecture, free, featuring William and Trilligator and guest artists. Post-concert event, following the event, Saturday, April 1 performance, a reception will take place. Galena Center for the Arts to open new exhibit. Dateline, Galena, Illinois. Galena Center for the Arts, 971 Gear Street, will open two events in its regional artist gallery and special exhibit space. The main gallery will hold an eclectic mix, an exhibit of artwork inspired by anything and everything. The special exhibit space will display, a Tom Cunningham retrospective. Cunningham was an artist and conservationist whose works feature many Joe Davis County landscapes. Proceeds of the sale of Tom's works will be donated to the Galena Center for the Arts. An opening reception will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 31. Admission is free. Donations are appreciated. Refreshments will be available. The exhibits will be open to the public from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Thursdays through Sundays and Sunday through May 28th. Joe Davis authorities seek info on theft of catalytic converter from school vehicle. Dateline, Hanover, Illinois. Authorities are investigating the theft of a catalytic converter from a vehicle belonging to a Joe Davis County School District. The equipment was taken from a 2019 GMC Yukon belonging to the River Ridge School District between 5 and 17 a.m. Wednesday, according to an online announcement from the Joe Davis County Sheriff's Department. Authorities have released a still from surveillance footage of a vehicle sought in relation to the theft. Vehicle is a dark-colored pickup with cab lights on the top, tow mirrors, a cowl-type hood, and bright light, white headlights. Anyone with information on the vehicle or the theft is asked to contact Dubuque Joe Davis County Crime Stoppers at 800-747-0017 or the Sheriff's Department at 815-777-2141. Anonymous calls to Crime Stoppers are eligible for a cash reward for information leading to an arrest. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department have the following reports. John M. Smothers, 25, no permanent address, was arrested at 7:14 a.m. Monday at the Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging voluntary absence from custody. Court document states that he did not return to the state correctional facility at 1494 Elm Street on November 26. Trevor M. Finn, 25, of 2090 Key Largo Drive, number 2, was arrested at 6:27 a.m. Monday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on warrants charging 3 counts of domestic assault with strangulation, 3 counts of child endangerment, and 1 count of domestic assault with injury. Dante A. Brandenburg, 21, no permanent address, was arrested at 12:54 a.m. Monday in the 2600 block of Anamosa Drive on warrants charging third-degree burglary, failure to comply with sex offender registry, violation of no contact order, and 3 counts of probation violation. John O. Shepard, 43, of Linden Station, Wisconsin, was arrested at 9:18 p.m. Friday in Luxembourg, Iowa, on a warrant charging failure to comply with sex offender registry. Cascade Police received reports of unwanted door knocking. Cascade, Iowa. Cascade Police said they've been receiving reports of unwanted knocking on residents' doors and windows. Police said in an online announcement that incidents have occurred between the hours of 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. are frightening some residents. The announcement states that residents should consider leaving their outdoor lights on overnight, and any unwanted door or window knocking should be reported to police by calling 563-852-3100 or 800-262-6013. Police say one hurt in two vehicle crash in Dubuque. Police said one person was injured in a two-vehicle crash Sunday in Dubuque. Anthony M. Main, 48, of Dubuque, was transported by ambulance to Unity Point Health Finley Hospital for treatment of his injuries, according to Dubuque Police. Police said Maine was traveling south on Glen Oak Street at 9:27 p.m. when a vehicle driven by Nathan H. Lang, 37, of Dubuque, was traveling east on Forest Lane and failed to stop at the stop sign at the intersection and the vehicles collided. Lang was cited with failure to obey a stop or yield sign. Maine was cited with failure to provide proof of financial liability. Dubuque County supervisors set levy rate at 20 cent increase, call budget conservative. Story by Benjamin Fisher at thmedia.com. A split Dubuque County Board of Supervisors on Monday approved a property tax levy for the fiscal year starting July 1. At an increase of 20 cents per $1,000 of taxable value over the current fiscal year. The levy rate matches what is required for expenditures a majority of the board previously supported. The countywide levy rate will be $9.21 per $1,000 of taxable value, up from $9.01, which will increase taxes by about $20 per $100,000. The levy will be $5.50 per $1,000 for properties in cities and $9.21 for those in unincorporated areas. Supervisors Harley Pothoff and Ann McDonough voted for the levy. Supervisor Wayne Kenneker voted against it. McDonough said the budget was largely year-to-year growth and lean, especially compared with what had been requested by county department heads. There's no extra in any of this budget, she said. Every department's requests were reviewed 2 times, prioritized, and by us, many of those were removed for another time, or maybe never. There aren't necessary cuts that need to happen. The conservation request was $1.9 million. We haven't even funded 40% of their request. This board can only be painted as fiscally conservative. Kenneker said the board could have done more to reduce spending in next year's budget, although he rebuffed the term cut. Potthoff said the expenditures had been conservatively considered. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on Tuesday, March 28, 2023 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Merlin L. Jasper, Manchester, Iowa. Merlin Mert Laverne Jasper, 98 of Manchester, Iowa, passed away on Friday, March 24, 2023, after a courageous battle with Parkinson's disease. Mert was born on January 25, 1925, in Dyersville, the son of Al and Clara Herring Jasper. He attended country school through the eighth grade and then worked on the family farm. Mert served his country from June 1945 to December 1946 as a military policeman. He had the honor of guarding Eleanor Roosevelt and General Montgomery while they were in New York City. He was a lifelong member of the Manchester American Legion Post No. 45. Mert then went on the honor flight to Washington, D.C. in 2011. After his military service, he started Jasper Construction Company in 1948, a farm, tiling, and land improvement business. Mert met the love of his life at a dance and later married Lillian Luke on June 17, 1950, at St. Peter's and Paul Catholic Church in Petersburg and celebrated 72 years together. They moved to Manchester in 1951 when they bought a farm. Mert farmed and continued with his tiling business, gave up full-time farming with the growth of his business. He started his business with a small Jeep with an attached trencher. His father, Al, and then brothers Bill and Tom later joined the business. Mert progressed from a small machine and eventually purchased large tiling machines. He built his business over the years to include caterpillars, bulldozers, and backhoes, enabling his business to grow. Mert was a member, charter member of Iowa Land Improvement Contractors Association and a member of the Northeast Iowa Land Improvement Contractors Association and served twice as president. He was awarded the Master Contractor of the Year in 1963. He retired in 1989. Conservation and education were important to Mert. He constructed terraces and waterways on his farms. He built a 2-acre pond for fish and planted many trees and windbreaks for wildlife habitat. He received the Delaware County Pheasants Forever Conservation Award in 1966 and the Isaac Walton Windbreak State Award in 1997. He also set aside 2 acres of native wetland prairie, which enabled West Delaware students to visit and study native prairie plants, thus receiving Friends of Education Award. During his retirement years, he took up the hobby of woodworking. His woodworking skills were self-taught and put to good use. He was a perfectionist and handcrafted many items for his family and church. Mert constructed desks, book cabinets, hutches, bedroom sets, dressers, and many more items for his grandchildren, for his children and grandchildren. For church, items included the presider and deacon chairs at St. Mary and St. Patrick Catholic Churches, podium in church and parish center, TV cabinet in the rectory, gift table, bride and groom kneelers, holy oil cabinet, music boards and pulley, wood railing around altar, and many items for auctions. Faith was an important part of Mert's life, and he was a longtime member of St. Mary Catholic Church. Mert believed strongly in giving back to the church and the community. He served his church as a lay minister, usher, finance committee, building committee, trustee, and St. Mary Cemetery Board. He was a member of the Knights of Columbus and was awarded the Knights of Columbus Distinguished Service Award and was an honorary life member. He received the Governor's Volunteer Award for being a resident advocate of the Good Neighbor Home for 23 years. Mert enjoyed fishing, hunting, golfing, and retirement. He looked forward to weekly card playing and coffee time at Hardee's with friends and spending time with family. In his business and personal life, Mert lived a life of kindness, generosity, honesty, integrity, and strong work ethic. His children and grandchildren will always remember him for his encouraging words and always having a smile on his face. Survivors include his wife, Lillian Jasper of Manchester, 4 children, Dr. Duane Rhonda Jasper of Independence, Dan Jasper of Phoenix, Arizona, Carolyn Ernie Mills of Janesville, Wisconsin, and Michael Annette Jasper of Gilbert, Arizona, 8 grandchildren, great-grandchildren, other great-grandchildren, his brother Tom Jasper of Dyersville, sister Norma Jim Wilhelm of Dyersville, brother-in-law, sisters-in-law, as well as many nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by an infant son, his parents, three brothers, sisters-in-laws, and other relatives. Online condolences may be sent to www.leonard-mullerfh.com. Massive Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, April 1, 2023 at St. Mary Catholic Church in Manchester, Iowa, with the Reverend Gabriel Anderson officiating. Visitation, 3 to 6 p.m. Friday, March 31 at Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Manchester. Friends may call after 9:30 a.m. until 10:15 at the church on Saturday. Interment with military rites, St. Mary Catholic Cemetery, Manchester, Iowa. Thomas Imhoff, Piazza, Iowa. Brother Thomas was born in Marathon, Wisconsin on October 19, 1928. At the age of 22, George Alois Imhoff entered New Melleray Abbey in Piazza, Iowa in 1915 and took the religious name of Thomas. In 1950, New Melleray sent 12 monks to found a monastery in the Missouri Ozarks named Our Lady of Assumption Monastery. Brother Thomas was sent to help at this monastery, where he stayed until it was closed in 2017. He then returned to New Melleray, where he died on March 23rd and 23. He will be missed by two sisters, Nancy and Rosemary, and his brother Richard. Two sisters preceded him in death, Elsie and Grace. He was a monk for 73 years and will be missed by his monastic community. The monks of New Melleray would like to thank the staff at Stonehill Care Facility as well as nurses from Dubuque Hospice. They all took such good care of Brother Thomas in the last 6 weeks of his life. Burial was at the cemetery at New Melleray. William Budzinski, Fenimore, Wisconsin. William Budzinski, 61 of Fenimore, died Friday, March 24, 2023. Visitation will be held from 2 to 7 p.m. today at Fenimore United Methodist Church and from 9 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, March 29th at the church where services will follow. Private burial will be at Einsville Cemetery in Clark County. Larson Funeral Home of Fenimore is assisting the family. John R. Holman. John R. Jack Holman, 91 of Dubuque, died Saturday, March 25, 2023. Visitation will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, April 2nd at the Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Services will take place at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, April 3rd at Resurrection Catholic Church. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Susan M. Romberg. Susan M. Romberg, 81 of Dubuque, died on Sunday, March 26, 2023. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10:45 a.m. Saturday, April 1 at St. Joseph the Worker Catholic Church, where a massive Christian burial will follow at 11 a.m. Burial will take place in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Hoffenschneider Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road, is assisting the family. Lois A. Hansen. Lois A. Hansen, 93 of Dubuque, died on Saturday, March 25, 2023. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 30th at Hoffenschneider Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road. A massive Christian burial will take place Friday at 10 a.m. March 31 at Holy Ghost Catholic Church. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Sarah E. Pemsel, 82 of Dubuque, died on Sunday, March 26th. 2023 arrangements are pending. Hoffenschneider Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road, is assisting the family. Here are some funeral services. Donald Ball, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation, 3 to 7 p.m. today and 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, March 29th, St. Clement Catholic Church, Lancaster. Massive Christian burial, 11 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Thomas I. Correll, Dubuque, Celebration of Life, noon Saturday, June 3rd, the other side, East Dubuque, Illinois. Norma J. Davis, Galena, Illinois, visitation 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Saturday, April 1, Galena Bible Church, service 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Charlene Hawks, Dubuque, visitation 3 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 31. Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home. 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, massive Christian burial, 11 a.m. Saturday, April 1, Resurrection Catholic Church. Ellen A. Jones Davis, Cuba City, Wisconsin, celebration of life, 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Saturday, April 29, American Legion Hall, Cuba City. Linda L. Kiefer, Keeler, Wisconsin, visitation, 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Saturday, April 1, Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Cuba City. Service 2:30 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Deborah A. Cruz, Dyersville, Iowa, visitation 5 to 7 p.m. today and from 9 to 10 a.m. Wednesday, March 29, Kramer Funeral Home, Dyersville. Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, March 29th, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Donna May J. Ryder, Dickeyville, Wisconsin, visitation 9 to 11:45 a.m. Friday, March 31, St. Joseph Catholic Church, Hazel Green Massive Christian Burial, noon Friday at the church. Bert J. Trinnell, Galena, Illinois, visitation 10:30 to 11 a.m. Today, St. Michael Catholic Church, Galena, Massive Christian Burial, 11 a.m. today at the church. Scott M. Wilson, Dubuque, Massive Christian Burial, 11 a.m. today, Holy Ghost Catholic Church. Here is another obituary, Mary C. Wildman, Cassville, Wisconsin. Mary C. Wildman, 78, of Cassville, died Sunday, March 26, 2023. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, April 1 at St. Charles Borromeo Catholic Church in Cassville, where Massive Christian Burial will follow. Burial will take place in the Cassville Cemetery. Martin Schwartz, Funeral Home and Crematory of Cassville, is assisting the family. Daryl D. Griffith, 90, of Dubuque, died on Saturday, March 25, 2023. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10:15 a.m. Saturday, April 1 at United Methodist Church in Sherrill, Iowa, where church services will follow at 10:30 a.m. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Hoffman Snyder and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road, is assisting the family. Merlin J. Jasper, Manchester, Iowa, 98, of Manchester, passed away Friday, March 24th, after a battle with Parkinson's disease. Here's a look at some business news. BizBuzz, Dubuque Jiu-Jitsu Club to move to expand a location. New salon opens in Dyersville. Galena Laser Therapy Clinic to continue growth. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from across the tri-state area. This edition highlights news in across the tri-state area, including Dubuque, Dyersville, and Galena, Illinois. A Dubuque Jiu-Jitsu Club will move to a new expanded location later this spring. Dubuque Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which operates in Vol Fitness, is making a move to 3135 Cedar Crest Ridge, Suite D, next to Hollywood Action Sports Skate Park. Willie Doyle, who runs the club, said he plans to be in the new space by May and operate a full slate of classes by June or July. My main goal with the club is to create a safe and fun training environment for people of all ages and all different walks of life, Doyle said. I'm very proud of the level of humanity and friendship and camaraderie that the club had, and I look forward to growing that and sharing that with the rest of the Dubuque community. Doyle said the club was started 8 years ago by Eldon Giancarlos, and Doyle took the classes under Giancarlos. The club suspended activities when COVID-19 pandemic began until Doyle took it over 2 years ago. We've grown greatly, Doyle said of the club, which currently has 40 members. We wanted to expand the club, and so we decided to get a new location. We ran out of mat space, which is hard because of safety reasons. If we're packed in there, we don't want a young kid getting bumped by a new kid accidentally. Doyle said the new location will provide 70% more mat space, and he hopes to grow the club to 100 people with extra space. Doyle said he plans to start offering jiu-jitsu classes to kids as young as 5 once the new space is up and running. He also offers discounts to military and law enforcement personnel who wish to try the sport, which Doyle said offers benefits both physically and mentally. The main thing I guess I'm really looking forward to is creating a fun and safe training environment to help spread the sport of jiu-jitsu, he said. Dubuque Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu currently offers classes at 7 p.m. Monday through Thursday. The club can be reached at 608-574-3794 and found on Facebook at facebook.com/DubuqueBJJ. New salon opens in Dyersville. Two women have opened a hair and nail salon in Dyersville. Redo Hair and Nails opened last month at 117 First Avenue West across from Chad's Pizza and Restaurant. The salon was opened by business partners Samantha Lammers and Rachel Gatto. Our husbands worked together in construction, Lammers said. Once I got back into hair, it all just kind of fell into place. Lammers said Gatto has been doing hair for about 30 years. Lammers said she graduated from Capri College in 2010 and worked as a stylist for a few years before moving back into the healthcare field, but now has gotten back into doing hair. The Dyersville Salon offers a full range of hair services, including cuts, colors, and extension. Gatto also does some work weeks and toupees. Lammers focuses on manicures, pedicures, and acrylics. The owners are the only employees. It's been really exciting, Lammers said. I like the idea of getting back into hair, and we've been extremely busy. There's a few salons in Dyersville, but I feel like there's not enough. We've gotten quite a few walk-ins. There's a big traffic flow for us. Redo Hair and Nails is open on weekdays, primarily by appointment with some walk-in availability. Appointments can be made by calling either 563-921-8052 or 563-590-2642. More information can also be found on the salon's Facebook page. Galena Laser Therapy Clinic, poised for future growth. A Galena clinic offering laser therapy has plans to further expand to reach more patients. Healing Waters Laser Center has operated at 300 Summit Street near Galena Food Pantry for nearly a year. Dr. Agnieszka Klucci had initially opened her practice in 2018 on Galena's Main Street. It allows for future growth, Klucci said of the current location. We're not planning on leaving anytime soon. This allows us to be able to expand and continue to grow the practice, to move more patients, and offer more in the future. Clutchy said the clinic started with a sole focus on chiropractic care, although she offered some laser therapy, which is used to rapidly decrease a patient's pain and aid the healing practice. I had actually been utilizing more laser therapy for patients and realized that I can actually help more patients with a larger variety of conditions while using laser therapy, Clutchy said, while noting that therapy can be used on conditions such as a sprained ankle or bone fractures. She added that her clinic has used Class 4 laser therapy, a more advanced version that uses computer programming to help create a patient's best treatment. Clutchy has also continued her education over the years to advance the laser therapy she offers to patients who come from as far as 1 hour away. Clutchy said she is onboarding another chiropractor, which will allow the clinic to offer more hours. She also hopes to add massage therapy to the current chiropractic, physical therapy, and laser therapy services. It's very custom to the patient and conditions, she said, of the clinic's care. Our goal is to get them out of the pain and get them rehab for the condition and get them out the door. Healing Waters Laser Center is open from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Monday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Wednesday, and 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday. The clinic can be reached at 815-776-7610, and more information can be found at lasergalena.com. Here's an editorial from the Dubuque Telegraph editorial board. Our opinion, Avelo marks new beginning for commercial air service in Dubuque. Great news landed in Dubuque on Wednesday in the form of a Boeing 737 aircraft with the name Avelo emblazoned on its side. With that touchdown, commercial air travel officially returned to Dubuque. Although the debut of the new ultra-low-cost carrier got off the ground about 2 months later than expected, an airport terminal bustling with passengers was a sight to behold Wednesday. With a welcome as warm as Florida sunshine, Dubuque gives a big hello to Avelo, the airline that will provide flights between Orlando International Airport and Dubuque twice weekly. And customers were ready. More than 160 people boarded the first flight to jet south for some fun in the Florida sun. This marks the return of commercial air service to Dubuque after the departure of American Airlines in September, which provided the flights to O'Hare International Airport in Chicago. Community leaders worked for months to secure an agreement with an air service provider, notably Molly Grover and Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce. Dubuque Regional Airport Director Todd Dalsey and Mayor Brad Kavanaugh led the tireless effort to develop a deal with Avelo. That meant financial support approved by the Dubuque County City Council and the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors, which came through to give Avelo assurances that Dubuque can help the carrier succeed here. Then came the setback of delayed approval of a complete security plan from the Transportation Security Administration, and Avielo operated its planned Dubuque flights out of Eastern Iowa Airport in Cedar Rapids until this past week. Now that the flights are underway, it's great to see the airport full of commercial passengers again. In addition to a huge perk for local travelers, the agreement means the employees working at the airport continue to have jobs, and flights to one destination easily could lead to more down the road if local passengers show the demand for service. Here's hoping the available flights are only the beginning for more commercial travel. Dubuque Regional Airport already serves public charters, including small single-engine aircraft, corporate jets, emergency helicopters, and military aircraft, not to mention the University of Dubuque Aviation Training Program. All that makes Dubuque's air traffic control tower the busiest in Iowa. Dubuque's airport along has had the strident support of the Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce and the local business community. Now is a key time to use our collective voices and connections and advocate on Dubuque's behalf in Washington to promote expanded air service. A warm welcome to Avielo and an invitation to folks from around the tri-state area and beyond. Once again, it's time to fly Dubuque. These editorials reflect the consensus of the Telegraph Herald editorial board. Here's a column by Rick Dickinson from the Greater Dubuque Development Corporation. Dickinson, we must grow the population to regain the workforce. Like most folks, I see the world through the prism of my life, the life of a baby boomer. Boomers are the product of an enormous surge in U.S. births after World War II. Those of us born between 1946 and 1964. To our children and grandchildren, that time seems as ancient as the Mesozoic era when dinosaurs walked the earth. But to me, it seems like yesterday. My dear parents were part of the greatest generation. They survived the Great Depression as children. They sacrificed and fought in World War II, and after the war, they married in 1952. I was their firstborn in 1953 with six brothers and sisters to follow. We boomers are a huge cohort of 76 million Americans. The families of my generation average four children per household, and those children influence nearly every institution we touch. But we are now leaving the labor market in droves. We are aging out for the good and bad of it. Now we must step aside. The problem is there are not enough workers to replace us. TFR is another one of those acronyms that I detest. It stands for the total fertility rate, referring to the average number of children born to women in any given generation. The TFR for my generation was 4. To maintain population at zero growth, the TFR must be 2.1. The TFR in America today is 1.64, and in Iowa it is 1.82. It might sound cold, but the truth is we are not replacing ourselves. Our workforce challenges are driven by that truth. It is a myth that the pandemic is a cause for our workforce shortages. In the months leading up to the pandemic, 65% of employers in the Greater Dubuque area were already experiencing workforce recruitment challenges. Today, that number is 73%, and the number of people working in Dubuque County is now higher than pre-pandemic numbers. The challenge of finding talent is not just a matter of too few people with skills necessary to do the job. The challenge is that there are simply too few people. A declining population spells trouble for higher education, employment, and Iowa's economy. There are macro solutions that are beyond local control or will take too long. They include a national to help in the short term. They include a national immigration policy, having more children, and increasing productivity through automation. However, we can't sit back and wait 18 years for a new generation of solutions to take hold. We must act now. You must embrace the goals of You Can Be Great Here, a campaign launched by the 46 members of Greater Dubuque's Development's Board of Directors. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.